What are the different therapeutic models when it comes to how we explore a client's mental health struggle, particularly amongst the AAPI community? Also, how do we think more interconnectedly about physical and chronic pain as it relates to mental health? And amongst AAPI communities, when we think about barriers to accessing mental health treatment, what might that involve? Welcome to People of Color in Psychology, the show that explores mental health topics specific to culture, diversity, and communities of color. I am your host, Jack Sen. As part of our AAPI Heritage Series, our guest today is Dr. Namrata Nanavate Vasquez, a licensed psychologist at the Houston Methodist Behavioral Health. She works in an outpatient setting with patients of all kinds and has a background in health psychology. Dr. Vasquez specializes in evidence-based psychotherapy for trauma-related disorders, adjustments to physical health conditions, somatic disorders, anxiety, depression, and the stress related to identity-based trauma. She is also highly engaged in clinical relevant research and enjoys collaborating in interdisciplinary and integrative patient care. In fact, Dr. Vasquez was in the past awarded the NSF Graduate Research Fellowship in graduate school. And Dr. Vasquez also spoke at the Pachacacha in Urbana-Champaign in 2015 and has given multiple talks at local cafes and coffee shops about science, always trying to engage the broader community in health-related conversations. As a South Asian first-generation American psychologist, Dr. Vasquez will be discussing the intersection between mental and physical health and how clinicians can be diligent about connecting and exploring these topics within the therapeutic environment with our AAPI community. Dr. Vasquez, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Jack. It's lovely to be here. I just want to clarify, I'm here speaking on my own behalf and do not represent the views of any organization, including where I currently work at Houston Methodist.
Why don't you tell me more about your clinical work and how you bridge this concept of identity-based trauma and evidence-based psychotherapy? Just tell me more about that.
Sure. So my experience with mental health actually began during my undergraduate years in Illinois, Southern Illinois, working with sexual assault survivors and survivors of domestic violence, violence against women. And it was there that I became very interested in the mental health aspects, as well as often the medical repercussions that would show up after, sometimes without a lot of understanding or a clear medical basis or physical injury. And I found that really interesting in that people didn't really understand it. And yet it also kind of felt intuitively easy to understand that something that is a psychological threat or trauma may impact our body and how we feel in our body, especially if it is a threat to our body itself, right? So that is sort of my introduction to the mental health world. In graduate school, I trained with a focus on health psychology, which is the study of how psychological factors, processes may impact our physical health and how we adjust to physical health conditions, such as diabetes or chronic pain, how mental health might show up in primary care settings. And then since then, I have focused on chronic illness, pain, these conditions that tend to have a mental health component, and particularly in individuals or populations that are minoritized or don't have a lot of access to health. Those are two different risk factors. I think it's really important to understand the relationship between mental health and physical health, and eventually, with greater understanding, provide more appropriate treatment for both, so that these conditions that largely become chronic or comorbid don't endure in these populations, because often when you have a mental health and a physical health condition, they both exacerbate one another. It's like a very pernicious cycle, right? You can imagine in a patient with depression and chronic pain, whichever arises first, they probably create this perpetuating cycle where I'm in pain and feeling down about it. As a result, I'm not going to go out and do the things I used to do, which then maybe keeps my body in a condition where I'm in pain, or I'm not maybe taking the movements that I need that could potentially help my physical condition. That might not always be the case. And as a result, I'm remaining depressed because I'm not engaging in that social activity. So that would just be one small, simplified example of how those might relate to one another. And then if you don't have access to appropriate diagnosis or treatment for depression or chronic pain in that example, it's even more confusing to know how to navigate.
Yeah. Now you're addressing both sides. You're seeing the relationship between, well, if I have this chronic pain condition, or it could be a chronic medical condition.
Absolutely.
And people don't know about it. They can't see it because sometimes medically, you know, let's say I have kidney disease or kidney failure or some heart disease, they can't see it.
Yeah.
And that can make navigating physical mobility in itself challenging.
Absolutely. And
you also mentioned, you know, particularly in the minoritized populations, how access to mental health can be a little bit tricky. We've had several folks in general talk about, you know, AAPI community, we really have a hard time talking about mental health. And so I'm curious about your own experience, your work. What are some of the nuances? How do you bring that into a conversation of mental health with the AAPI community?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Many cultures, there's unique stigma or messages that impact how people feel about receiving or accessing mental health care or seeking out mental health support. The AAPI community specifically actually has the lowest rates of seeking mental health care compared to any other racial ethnic group, according to one study, with about only 23-ish% of AAPI adults with a mental illness actually receiving treatment. And this was a study done in 2019. A lot of this can be attributed to systemic barriers, as well as stigma or cultural connotations with mental health care that are hard to overcome. So when I say access, I think that means so many different things, right? People immediately think like transportation, financial access. Those are very real barriers. In addition, there's language access barriers. There's education as a barrier in terms of access. People might not even know that their presentation is appropriate for mental health care or medical care, depending on the messages they receive. And that is a barrier to access. Of course, financial resources, there's a huge mental health shortage of providers and care. So like that is a barrier to access. But one of the things I see frequently within the AAPI community is that education access in terms of like education about mental health. So I hear often, oh, I think therapy is for people who have it worse than me, or only if you're really at your rock bottom or breaking point. I have pain, but like, who doesn't, right? So there's like this normalization of suffering and struggle that you sometimes see. And of course, there's so many cultures within the AAPI community. So it can differ widely based on family, region, context. But sometimes you do have that cultural tone of therapy and maybe increased level of medical care is for people who are suffering more than me. Like I should be able to handle this. And I think that is another barrier to access culturally when those messages are perpetuated, particularly during childhood. Like growing up with those messages can mean that you grow up believing these things. You know, we're handed a lot of beliefs from those around us when we're growing up. And then sometimes we update those beliefs when we're older, but sometimes they linger and we struggle with those ideas that we're inheriting, and it's hard to know, is this something I should seek support around, or is it normal and I should quote unquote suck it up, right? So that's a huge barrier to access as well. And I think there have been more and more conversations within the AAPI community about mental health, about the breadth of reasons you can seek mental health support, and the high prevalence of mental health concerns that exist within the community, whether or not that's due or attributed to the culture itself. I think every culture has some messages that negatively can impact our mental health.
Yeah, I like that you're talking about the breadth of reasons for why one would seek mental health treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And tell me more about, you know, with clinicians being diligent about connecting and exploring mental, physical, essentially the biopsychosocial model. Do you have some examples how clinicians might want to integrate those concepts in therapy?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So in my role, I've worked with trainees both in like psychology, but also psychiatry. And so sometimes we work with med students or folks interested in med school. You know, I mentored undergraduates that were interested in a variety of careers during my graduate work too. And almost everyone now, I think, does get some exposure to the biopsychosocial model. It's expanded to include things like cultural context as well. But implementing that from that conceptualization into your actual patient care, I think, is sometimes still hard to do or maybe not done as much. And so when I see a patient that comes in through the door, I'm really interested in their biological and medical background, any conditions that I should be aware of that they are adjusting to, because that is likely to be a large part of their life. And then the social context they grew up in, the social context they're in now, the psychological experience of that, right? And then the cultural identity that they carry and the cultural identities that may be placed on them that they may not align with. I think that's another interesting component, particularly in a country where there's a lot of first-generation Americans, folks from bicultural backgrounds. So there's a lot of different identities that we see. And then there's also the way they're perceived that I think is like a separate but interesting and important conversation. And so when a patient comes in with a diagnosis, sometimes some of that nuance that you're trying to understand in an individual is taken away or kind of shoved aside, and the diagnosis is what's focused on. And so I think we're moving away from this as a field to really see people as whole with multiple parts. But I think as clinicians, we can do a better job of that, particularly thinking about the cultural context and how the relationship with their body over time, how the relationship with healthcare settings over time may impact the way they show up today. You know, if someone, I use pain as an example because that's the thing I have most experience with. But if someone has had a relationship with the pain in their body for a long time, perhaps they're from an identity that has experienced dismissal from their healthcare providers. Maybe it was really difficult for them to seek medical treatment in the first place. Maybe they don't have a good understanding of what's normal or abnormal. Maybe with their mental health symptoms too, they're having the same relationship or experience. They're not sure what's normal or abnormal. Really difficult for them to seek treatment. And maybe they have been dismissed by people in their lives or healthcare providers in the past. And so all of that's really important. I think when a patient's walking in the door, it's going to impact how we understand what they say to us when we're trying to get a history, write a medical or psychological history. And so I think asking the right questions and then having kind of an open mind when patients come in, thinking about all of these different factors is really important and something that as a field we can continue to do better.
It starts from the very beginning.
Yes.
I love that you're talking about the relationship to healthcare systems, relationship to care, relationship to mental health care, what messagings they received based on their cultural context. And thinking about, the biopsychosocial model, what is it like to be ill? What is it like? What does
Yeah.
it mean for you to experience this medical diagnosis, say chronic pain? So in thinking about the initial encounter as clients are coming in, what are some language we as clinicians might want to consider using? Also related to that, what questions might we want to consider asking?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think number one, I always am looking to the research about this as well. So there's more and more literature out there about, you know, how to approach patients in a way that promotes safety and a healthy conversation of that first encounter. So I always encourage folks to look at that as well. But some things I've been thinking about recently are in the hope of creating a safe environment and having a patient really feel seen, their complete self, even if they're not sure what that is yet, right? It's really important to have like an open space, an open emotional space, and to have a pace that hopefully allows that, which I think is one of the challenges in a lot of healthcare settings. You have like 20 or 30 minutes sometimes. Some of the things I like to ask about, you know, when we ask about trauma, for example, there's different ways that question can go. You can say, "Have you ever experienced trauma?" That's kind of a confusing question. What is trauma? What does my culture think trauma is? what have I heard trauma is, right? So when you ask the patient that, I think it can be really difficult to answer yes or no, right? And often that's what patients say. Well, what is trauma? Well, this has happened, but it didn't affect me. This may have been trauma, or they might have a strong emotional response that they're not prepared for, right? Maybe they recall something that's happened to them, and then all of a sudden there's emotions flooding in, and they kind of feel caught off guard. And so the way that language can be different or maybe more culturally sensitive is, you know, in your experience, have you ever been hurt in a way that's affected you? You know, has anyone ever hurt you in a way that still impacts you? So there are ways we can think about questions or language that might be more accessible to different cultures, particularly when a lot of the words we use in mental health have like these big nuanced connotations, for better or worse, change over time, right, in the way that people talk about things, more than just these kind of like buzzwords that we know probably impact people.
You know, as you're talking about that, I am having a mental shift in thinking about assessment in general, where oftentimes we are going mm-hmm. through the checkbox of, hey, finding yourself depressed, you know, mm-hmm. is very, I don't know, very diagnostic.
Confusing.
Yeah, confusing as opposed to, like you're saying, wait, let's ask about people's experiences, you know, in the past week. Tell me, you know, just what was it like for you just navigating your day? Have you noticed more ups, more downs, you know, mm-hmm. Just kind of being in present with the client. Mm-hmm. Huh? So it's particularly, I love that. It's like, well, have you been treated unfairly based on your identity as opposed mm-hmm. to, hey, have you experienced racism? Now, we mm-hmm. do want to call that out, which is being
absolutely
able, right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we do want to be able, as clinicians, comfortable to talk about it.
Absolutely.
However, not going through it as like some checkbox.
And I think as clinicians, it's our job to create that sense of safety and ensure that the patient actually feels safe before we're pushing for any kind of information. I mean, it should never feel that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for discussing this with us. Why don't you tell me how you got into mental health treatment as a field?
Sure. So one of the pieces is that, like many people in the AAPI or South Asian community, I was interested in medicine, being someone very good at school and trying really hard to be good at school and, you know, living up to some standards in my community. And so I was initially interested in medicine. And during the journey of being pre-med, which is a fun one, at some point I just became very interested in the psychological, psychiatric aspects of health, which is probably also where some of my interest in physical health comes from. And then I started to think back more to the experiences of people in my family, in my extended family, in my religious or cultural community, and the way that we talk about kind of just emotions broadly. So within my experience, and I have a younger brother, you know, we experienced a range of emotions that we were kind of navigating. We're very close growing up, and there were so many messages about what to do with your emotions. Like, you know, we're supposed to be happy all the time. You know, if we're feeling upset, that's something that is abnormal or should be go away, like do something about it. You know, these ideas that certain emotions are acceptable and certain emotions are not acceptable. And as I got older, that just kind of felt strange to me. Like, I think a lot of emotions are natural. That kind of idea felt intuitive to me pretty early on, which I think aligns well with being a therapist. But that contrast or that gap between the emotionality that I saw in the people around me and the lack of acceptance of that emotionality, I felt there was like a tension there, I think. And I was very curious about that tension as I continued to learn more about psychology and mental health. And I think that tension still exists in a lot of cultural contexts. You know, the reality that we all have a very wide range of emotions day to day, minute to minute, hour to hour, but what feels acceptable in certain contexts is very different from that. So particularly in my family and community, I think improving my own understanding of mental health and how mental health can better support the South Asian population was really important to me. I also really wanted to kind of bring South Asians to mental health. So not only did I want to bring mental health to the South Asian community within my own community, but I wanted to bring some of us into the field. You see a lot of South Asian cardiologists and surgeons, and I'm related to several, and I'm proud of that discipline. All of medicine is hard work. There's so many respectable careers and important careers, obviously. But I had never known anyone that had worked in mental health in my community, in my family. My grandmother actually studied psychology for a while in her undergraduate years. And so that was something I learned about later on as an adult, which I found really interesting. But no one had done it kind of professionally. And I wanted to figure out what that looked like.
So with that, I mean, now that you have broken the ceiling in your community, or in your family, I should say, what does it mean for you to be a South Asian psychologist?
Yeah, I think it brings a lot of validity or credibility to mental health being an important issue to at least my inner community. Like, oh, okay, we can talk about this. This is a real thing. You know, people actually suffer. I've had South Asian patients in my career. I think kind of just saying that out loud within my cultural context can feel validating for people. Like, oh, you've had someone that needed help with their mental health. Well, maybe that's okay for me to want help with my mental health, right? So just that representation alone, I think, feels huge, particularly when I'm talking about mental health in community events, organizations, with extended family. It just allows an open space to even think about the topic, right? To even allow conversations about mental health. That feels like a big change on its own. And then the more I delve into my career, there are a lot of South Asian focused mental health organizations, AAPI focused mental health organizations and communities trying to kind of have this large cultural impact. And so I think getting more connected with other providers who have similar cultural backgrounds and interests has also been huge and has helped me feel less like an outsider in the community as well, because I think I felt like I was entering a new territory, and sometimes it felt the territory felt the same. You know, I felt pretty different than a lot of my peers with my background, and that had its own challenges. So it's nice to get connected to other clinicians that look like me.
Yeah, the connectedness is so important in representation, to be able to just say, oh yeah, I worked with a client today and they're South Asian. Mm-hmm. You know, that really does shatter this belief. Oh, wait, we can get treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned the challenges of lack of representation. So are there others where in your career as a person of color, additional challenges you faced and overcame that you would be willing to share?
Sure. Yeah. So like I said, I think there are a lot of folks with backgrounds similar to mine who are in this field. However, I think depending on the program, you don't get to meet a lot of them. So within my training programs across the board, I felt like somewhat of a minority just based on being South Asian, having immigrant parents, not necessarily having a family background that would have experience in the PhD world. Like I said, a lot of my family are engineers and medical doctors are going into finance and technology. And so navigating the entire career trajectory of becoming a psychologist was kind of an independent journey as well. Whereas, you know, a lot of my peers maybe had parents who were psychologists or had seen a therapist since they were a child. And so some of that exposure felt sort of new. I think there was also frequently assumptions, very, very benign, subtle assumptions made about how I may have grown up in the mental health world. Like in my training roles as well, I found that people would react a certain way at times to my stimulus value or identity kind of being the one providing services. So I worked in a lot of different rural areas across my training. Sometimes people would be expecting a certain age, gender, racial background in their clinical provider, and I did not always match. Religion can be very important to patients as well. You know, there's there's identities that patients look for in their therapists or providers. And so sometimes there'd be assumptions made about my religious background or my beliefs that would enter then the clinical space. And so a lot of my training was focused on how to navigate those conversations and promote a sense of safety with patients that may not have met anybody like me before.
Well, to be able to focus on providing the clinical care, meanwhile, creating a space to address potentially questions that are directed towards you because you're different.
Yeah.
Because you, or not that you're different, but more so you don't fit the mold of what your client is expecting.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that comes back to representation, right? Like in TV or media, there's more and more therapists out there than there were before, but often there's just a way that therapists look or act or behave. And then people kind of assume that that might be what it's like. And for better or worse, sometimes that's the idea that patients come in with. And so, yeah, sometimes I don't fit that mold. And sometimes therapy and media is not very accurate. But people come in with all kinds of expectations from their own cultural background. And so sometimes the initial part of therapy is just navigating the differences or the gap between what they expect and what is offered and seeing if that's a good fit.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Vasquez, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I think my hope is just that folks continue to talk about the presence of mental health and the presence of mental health struggles in the AAPI community, in the South Asian community. I think there's a host of specific risk factors or experiences within the AAPI community that can exacerbate our mental health struggle. Things like microaggressions, stereotyping, unfair treatment, discrimination. And so I think particularly it's important for all of us to talk to one another and create open spaces within our own communities so that we can seek support and care outside of the community with providers and find providers that can help with that. So I hope the conversation keeps going.
Well, Dr. Vasquez, how do we support you?
You focus on yourself and take care of your mental health and create communities where people are able to support one another's mental health. So that eventually it's normal when our South Asian or Asian friends and colleagues and family decide to seek mental health care or talk about mental health struggles. And that doesn't have to be the first barrier. It's hard enough kind of seeking mental health care and focusing on mental health treatment. If we can get to a place where that initial stigma barrier is a little lower, I think that would be wonderful for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. It'll make your life easier too. So you're not the only face of self-aided psychologists.
Yes. And yes. If you're interested in mental health and want to focus on that in your career, know that it's okay. And we're always happy to see people who are interested in learning more about how to work in mental health. And there's a lot of different ways. So being a psychologist is not the only option. So
yeah.
I'd love to see more faces of people from different backgrounds in the field.
All right, Dr. Vasquez, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jack.
A huge thank you to our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, please share and subscribe to People of Color in Psychology. You can also support us by registering for continuing education courses or making a one-time donation on the Multicultural Counseling Institute's website. Their feedback is important to us, so feel free to send an email, a message on LinkedIn, or leave a voice message on our website. Until next time, this is your host, Jack Sun.